set up and we'll get started.
What do you want? You have a PPT.
Yeah, I have a PPT.
I hope everyone's comfortable. I'd like to start off with a couple of stories. These are stories of extremely successful people in the corporate world. I've personally met both of them. I've extensively interviewed one of them. The first one I want to talk to you, I'm not going to mention names, that you'll understand why as we go along. The first person I want to talk to you about, let's call him Krishna Kumar. Okay. He was working with a software company, a hugely successful software company. He joined them in the early 90s to help them with finance. And he really helped this IT company become successful over the next decade. He was in charge of the overseas listing of this IT company. And he kind of really set benchmarks, and he really set the bar when it came to investor relations. He really set the bar in terms of financial disclosures, he made this company one of the most admired, not just among Indian investors, but among global investors. Give me a minute. Thank you. There was a hiss that was coming from behind. And made the company successful among global investors too. So as the company grew, there was time for CEOs to change, and it was pretty apparent that one of the CEOs was going to retire, and a new CEO had to be appointed. And around that time, there was a lot of speculation in the media that he would be the next CEO. There were articles coming out. Journalists like us speculated. We do like to speculate. So we are kind of speculating he would be the next CEO and all that. But when the board met to pick the next CEO, they picked someone else. And I don't know exactly what went through, but he quit this company soon enough. There's another story I want to share. This is the story of a HR head of a large bank. He is extremely outspoken. He's probably the most well-known HR professional in the country today, certainly among the top five. And he's worked with two CEOs. He's hugely well-known across the country. And when the second CEO took over, his personal brand equity, some people are guessing, you can guess all you want, but I'm not going to get the name. You're not going to get the name out of me, right? His personal brand equity was probably as much as the new CEO. And he was very vocal. Anytime there's an issue, he was a dial a quote guy. You could dial and he would give you the most. He was a journalist's delight. Then one day there was a press release that the head of HR, so-and-so, has, I almost mentioned his name, that wouldn't be right, is now being asked to head the CSR department. Now, we might all feel CSR is a noble cause. It is CSR, for those of us who don't know, it's corporate social responsibility. Every company has a social responsibility, and the man, CSR head, is leading that. But if you're an extremely ambitious professional, this is a wilderness posting. You don't want this posting. You want to be the CEO next, and you don't want to go to this posting. And, not a difficult time for him either. You know, all of us, we may not be CEOs, but we do have such crushing disappointments. I still remember one of the most crushing moments for me was one appraisal many years ago where I was given a 7% increment. And now, that might not sound bad in a bad economy, but those were the days, this was just around the dot-com boom. And until then, I had only got 40%, 80%, 60% increments. I would get promoted every year or every other year. And this 7% was, and I was preparing for a 40%, 50% raise. I'd started spending in advance. All of that was happening. And then I got the letter at 7%. It was the most crushing. I was so disappointed that I made some horrible career decisions after that. But God was merciful. He kind of set it right. And he used all of that to shape who I am today. So there are times when our ambitions, excitement, and hopes get crushed.
let's face it, that's reality. We are all going to face that. It's inevitable. It's not a question of will it happen, it's a question of when will it happen. For some of us, the biggest disappointments might come in our careers. For others, perhaps it's a relationship. Perhaps it's an investment going bad, huge financial losses. But whatever it is, we all face. The question you're going to be looking at today is, what do we do when life hits a dead end? The Bible calls this a wilderness experience. That's a photograph of what wilderness would look like, a desert wilderness. The Bible talks a lot about a wilderness experience, and that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at one psalm today, that's Psalm 42. For those of us who don't know, Psalms is a big part of the Bible. Psalms are musical songs that are actually written out in the Bible for us to read. They are beautiful accounts of what a relationship with God really looks like. So as you read the Psalms, you will find there is a lot of joy, a lot of worship, a lot of praise, a lot of celebration. But you will also find in the Psalms a lot of anguish, a lot of mourning, a lot of distress. The Psalms are full of raw human emotions expressed to God. And we're going to be looking at one such Psalm today, Psalm 142. But before we actually get into the Psalm, what I'd like to do is give us a little bit of background in terms of who wrote the Psalm and what is the time, what is the context in which that Psalm was written. The man who wrote the Psalm is a man named David. Most of us would know him. He was the most successful. He is the most well-known king in the Old Testament, in the nation of Israel. So when David was a teenager, there was this prophet called Samuel. And Samuel had actually appointed the previous king, that was King Saul, who was reigning at this time. And Samuel comes and he anoints David as the next king, even when David was still a teenager. And he was an ordinary, common shepherd boy. And soon after that, there is this war that happens between Israel and another nation called Philistine. And in this war, there's this huge giant of a man named Goliath, who comes and challenges the Israelites, and there's nobody to take him on. You may never have read the Bible, but surely all of us have heard the story of David and Goliath. And David, as a young boy, comes and kills Goliath. So that's him. Soon after that, David leads the army in a summer of victories. He leads them in battle after battle after battle after battle. And he helps Israel win all of that. So much so, the Israeli soldiers come up with this song, Saul has killed thousands of enemies. That's the previous king, the current reigning king. And David has killed 10,000. And that arouses this king's jealousy, Saul's jealousy. And so Saul comes up with a plan. He says, I'll give you my daughter in marriage, and if you will give me a dowry. Now, in those days, the men had to give a dowry to get their wives to be. And so Saul wants David killed because he is jealous, and he asks for a, to us it will seem like a really, really weird dowry. He asks for 100 enemy foreskins. That's gross. But that's exactly what Saul asked. And the reason he asked that was you couldn't go with an army. This was a commando mission David had to do. He had to go by himself, kill 100, and bring home, don't ask me how he did it, bring home 100 foreskins. And David does that, he just does it better. He comes back with 200 of foreskins, and he gets it, and he gives it to Saul the king, and he marries. But Saul is so jealous, there comes a time when he tries to kill David. And David, this hugely successful soldier, the general of the army, the commander-in-chief, probably the most admired man in the whole nation, has to flee for his life. He has to give up all his success and run away. David, the superstar CEO, was sent to exile. All his dreams, all his ambitions were crushed. And he came and he faced a wilderness which would have looked pretty much like this. And that's where he he wrote this psalm.
Let's start off the story from this book called 1 Samuel. That's part of the Old Testament in the Bible. Samuel is the prophet that I was talking about. So this is where our story starts. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became the commander. About 400 men were with him. To begin with, David spends, we don't know exactly how much time, all alone by himself in the cave. He escapes to a cave of Adullam. The psalm we're going to read today, that Psalm 142, is a psalm that David actually wrote in this cave. So that's the context, and that's the psalm. I'm going to request Ben to read that psalm out for us from the beginning, Master.
O Master of David, when he was in the cave of prayer, I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out before him my complaint. Before him I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it is you who watch over my way. In the path where I walk, people have hidden a snare for me. Look and see. There is no one at my right hand. No one is concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I cry to you, Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, that I may praise your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of your goodness.
So that's the psalm you're going to be looking at today. We're going to be looking at, from this psalm, lessons in terms of what do we do when life hits the dead end. We're going to be looking at two things. The first two things David did, which we can learn from, and one thing that God does, which we must understand. So that's really what we're going to be trying to draw out from the psalm. Two things that David did that we can learn from, and one thing God does, which we must understand. So let's look at the two things that David did in this season of wilderness in his life. Very simple things. First, he prayed out aloud. And that's what the psalm is all about. I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice. So he prays out aloud. And second, he seeks God's wisdom above his own. Two things. Simple enough, but let's try and unpack that a little bit. The first thing David did is he prayed out aloud. When the psalm starts off, it says it's a maskil. I hope I'm pronouncing that, maskil. A maskil is actually, it's not just a psalm, it's not just a prayer. A maskil is a psalm of wisdom. A maskil is a psalm of instruction. And when it says, so what this means is, this is not just a psalm, this is not just a prayer, this is actually a teaching on how to pray. That's what this psalm is all about. Now, I know many of us would have many notions about praying, and we all come from different backgrounds, and we all carry our own notions of praying. Some of us pray out loud, some of us pray soft, some of us go to sleep as soon as we start praying. Thursday morning, I asked our daughter Varsha to pray. It was a holiday for her. I said, Varsha, why don't you pray? And she was lying down. She was in a really lazy mood. But because I said pray, she prayed. And this is how she prayed. So I had to take her. This was her posture when it came to prayer. Right? Jokes apart, this psalm talks about how to pray. And one of the things it says is, I cry out aloud. I lift my voice. You know, honestly, crying out loud sounds crazy for many reasons. First, we are not a crying out aloud people. We are basically a brooding people. When we have a trouble or problem in our lives, you know, our mind gets extraordinarily active. We take that problem, we take that challenge, We slice it and we dice it in a million different ways. And each of the way will have a scenario. And we will actively imagine how that scenario will lead on to for the next 5 years of our lives. Yeah? And we will look at it this way, we will look at it, we'll agonize about it, we'll talk to our friends about it, we'll brood about it. Sometimes we utter a prayer under our breath. Let's face it, that's what we are naturally like. Left to myself, that's what I would be like. Prayer is not our first impulse. And most often, we are not comfortable with a full-throated crying out to the Lord kind of a prayer. And even if we are comfortable, we rarely ever pray like that. You know, when I first became a follower of Jesus, one of the things that I found beautiful was that I learned how to pray. And I learned that prayer is as simple as a conversation with a friend. So in my early days as a follower with Christ, I just fell in love with prayer. It amazed me, given the upbringing, different upbringing I had, that prayer could just be speaking to God. That's a beautiful experience. I really want to encourage us, especially some of us who've been coming here for a few weeks. You probably don't really have a church experience, but if you've been coming here for a few weeks, if you've never prayed in your life before, I really want to encourage you. Why don't you try it? Try it tonight. You don't have to cry out loud, not the first time at least. But you could just verbalize a prayer. I tell you the peace that I experienced when I prayed first. The peace that I experienced when after slicing and dicing a million times, finally when I get to verbalize my prayer to God, when I look to heaven, when I look to Jesus and I pray, finally there is peace. I really want to encourage everyone to try to begin with a quiet prayer. But that's not how David prays. David cried out aloud. I want you to think who David is. David is a battle-hardened warrior at this point in time. He's probably 27 at the prime of his youth. He is the guy who killed Goliath. He was a commander-in-chief, spectacularly successful as a commander, spectacularly successful as a commando, special operations. He's celebrated as a hero all over this country. And I don't know if you've seen these old medieval war movies. I love to watch them. Troy is one of my favorites. The blood and gore of battle. It's okay to sit in a nice multiplex with popcorn and watch that. But imagine being in the thick of battle. And David has been in many battles. He has seen blood. He has shed blood. He has cut people up. It's not easy for a battle-hardened warrior to cry out aloud. And I dare say that it's as difficult for us working professionals to pray. We are no less proud than the toughest of warriors. That's what the world has done to us. It's not easy for us to pray. But I want you to think, this is the man who's crying out aloud. He's crying out, if you read the words of the psalm, he is crying out in anguish. And I want to really reflect. This psalm is written in a cave. David is actually praying this in a cave. What happens when you cry out aloud in a cave? It echoes. And what happens when it echoes? Everyone's going to hear your prayer. Everyone's going to hear your cry of anguish. And in David's case, who are the people hearing his prayer? 400 discontented, indebted, distressed, good-for-nothing soldiers whom David is supposed to be leading. Is that good leadership? Bearing his soul, becoming vulnerable before the people he is supposed to lead. I like to look at a few parts of the prayer. Look at verse 3. My spirit grows faint within me. You know, the word faint is my spirit grows weak within me. That's not the language of a commander of an army. If you've seen the movie Troy, I can think of two scenes. One is the enemy has broken into the city of Troy, and there is this commander who's leading a small batch of the army on the last stand. Right? I don't know if you remember the scene. The army is about to break in into the door, and this man is standing and holding the last company of soldiers to defend, and the way he psychs the soldiers up. You're going to die, but who cares if we die? Let's put up a good... He's psyching them up. Or the scene where the Trojans invade Achilles and his camp in the night, and they're walking to a beat. You remember that beat? That's what soldiers do before battle. They are not faint-hearted. When David is crying out, he's making himself vulnerable. Verse 4, I have no refuge, nowhere to hide. What about the 400 people following him? I'm in desperate need. David is publicly admitting his weakness and vulnerability. That's prayer. Admitting our inability to save ourselves. Admitting before God our inability to help ourselves. You know, I think the world, it's good morals, moral of the story which we've learned are good, but beyond a point, they won't really disappoint us. One of the things we've been taught is God helps those who help themselves. And we teach our children, don't cry. You know, you're a boy, you're a man, don't cry. Right? To accept our weakness before God, I think is the first step to find peace and have a relationship with God. And I'm convinced the biggest reason I don't pray is I'm far too confident of my strength. I think, and I believe, genuinely believe, and I need to really, by God's grace, overcome this. I genuinely believe I can do all things through my strength. That's the natural posture of my heart. I worked as a business journalist for 20 years now. I have to admit, to this day, when I have a workplace challenge, my first impulse is not to pray. My first impulse is to fix it. When it doesn't get fixed, then I pray. And that's true of the work I do in church as well. I'm more inclined to work in my strength, try and fix things myself, go with my strategies, my plans, my ideas, than go to God and say, you know, God, Jesus, I can't do this. I need you. Need you to help me. Crying out aloud, what David is doing is one step beyond that. This is not humbly going and saying, God, please help me. This is a full-throated cry of despair. He is crying out loud. And this crying out loud is a cry of utter helplessness. This desperate cry is an internal, is an external expression of the deep internal sense that David is carrying, that he cannot fight this battle by himself. If I am not crying out aloud like David, it means I am not dependent on God. If I am not crying out aloud, it means I am not depending on God. Why do I say that? I say that for two reasons. One, what David is doing, crying out aloud. The Bible, while reading through the book of Hebrews, many of us, has something very interesting to say about Jesus' life when he was here on earth. This is from a book in the New Testament called Hebrews, chapter 5, verse 7. During the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. This describes Jesus' prayer as a lifestyle and how he prays. This is not just a one-off affair. During the days of Jesus' life, this is how he offered up prayers. You know, I know some of us may still not be comfortable with this whole notion of praying out aloud. It does seem a little strange. It may seem a little strange for some of us. There are some very obvious questions that come up, very practical, genuine questions. That's some of the questions that really pop up. Is God deaf that he can't hear my prayer? Is God so far away that he can't hear unless I pray loud? Right? And some of us are cynical. To those of us who are cynical, this is how we would articulate our objection to praying out aloud. Is God a sadist that he wants to see us begging and crying before he blesses us? Is that what God is? Is that why he wants me to cry out aloud? And lastly, this is for us, for those of us who are extraordinary, extremely cynical. You say, so you're telling me if I pray out aloud, all my problems are going to be solved? Yeah? I think these are real questions. These are genuine questions. If you have that question running through your mind, your heart, we respect that. We're going to try our best. I'm going to try my best to see if we can help those questions. The first three questions are really answered if you understand that prayer is perhaps less for God and more for us. I say that because of something Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 verse 8. This is what Jesus says. Your Father, and Jesus is teaching his disciples how to pray. And Jesus says, your Father knows what you need even before you ask him. So why on earth should I pray? Yeah? And then Jesus goes on to say, pray like this. And he says, our Father in heaven. And he teaches the Lord's Prayer, which many of us know. Our Father in heaven, holy be your name. And goes on. Prayer is more for us than it is for God, because God already knows what we need. And what prayer does is it helps us in two ways. A, prayer helps us grow in our relationship with God. That's the first way it helps us. Second, prayer helps us grow in our dependence on God. Grow in our relationship and grow in our dependence on God. Let me try and bring this home to our hearts. How many of you have seen rich, spoiled teenagers? Have you been one? I'm just kidding. Yeah? So, I'd like you to imagine how a rich, spoiled teenager would behave in this day and age. You know, I'm sure he's got a nice phone and he's kind of swiping and he's on the phone. His dad is trying to talk to him, but he's not, you know, he's not giving his father attention. And suddenly he stands up, Dad, can you give me a couple of grand, please? I have to go out and meet my friends. He takes the money and he goes, right? You can develop that. All of us are imaginative. We can imagine that scenario. This is us. This is how we behave with God. 99% of the time. We don't pay him attention. We don't listen to what he's trying to speak to us. And once in a while we'll go to him, hey Dad, have this problem. What about fixing it for me today? Yeah? Now, no father would be happy with that. That father is going to do everything in his strength to build and develop his relationship with his son. He's going to want to spend... Sure, the father will give the son whatever he wants. That's a father's heart. But a father's heart also longs for intimacy, with friendship, with companionship with his son and with his daughter. That's what God wants. So if we keep behaving like a spoiled teenager, in our interest, God will encourage us and draw us to that relationship. And he's going to draw us by prayer. And when do we pray? When there are problems. Yeah? That's how God draws us to prayer. And that's why God is encouraging us to cry out aloud, because that cry is a cry coming deep from the soul. You cannot manufacture it. It's an emotion, desperate dependence on God. And the last question that we're looking at, are you basically telling me that if you pray out aloud, everything will be okay? No, that's not what we're saying. You cannot, I cannot manufacture that prayer. But could it be that in our love for God, could we come to that place where we're willing to admit that I can't do it? I desperately need you to be able to. Would we come to that place where we cry out aloud as an act of dependence on God? That's the first thing we can learn from. David cried out aloud. He set aside his strength and his popularity and all that, and he cries out to God, unashamed of seeking God's help. That's the first thing. The second thing that David did is he seeks God's wisdom above his own. He seeks God's wisdom above his own. We're going to go back to the book of 1 Samuel. We're going to read one more small passage from that. This is soon after David goes into the cave. And this is it. Let me read that out for us. When David was told, look, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah,
and are looting and the threshing floors, they would inquire of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go and attack the Philistines?" The Lord answered him, "Go attack the Philistines and save Keilah." But David's men said to him, "Here in Judah, we are afraid because they are just 400 disgruntled, indebted men. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the Philistine forces?" That's an organized, well-oiled army. Once again, they would inquire of the Lord. And the Lord answered him, "Go down for Keilah. Go down to Keilah, for I'm going to give the Philistines in your hand." So David is inquiring of God. You know, when we hit a dead end, when we have, when we are in an impossible situation in life, we respond in two ways. First, we feel sad and give up. And we just enjoy wallowing in self-pity. It's something we enjoy. I enjoy that. I have to confess, right? That's one way. Or, I have to fix this. I can't. How can I continue being like this? I'm going to fix this. And we psych ourselves out. We psych ourselves up to go ahead and fight that battle. Either of those responses shuts God out of that situation. What David is doing is actually inquiring of God. And I'd like us to look at the way inquire like this. If you're going somewhere and you've lost, you don't have directions, you would stop and inquire for directions. It's like that. And sometimes, you know, when I'm driving a car, sometimes in India, you're driving, so there's no one on the road, but there is a shop. You can go and ask the shopkeeper. But to ask the shopkeeper, you have to stop the car, you have to get down from the car, you have to go and ask him for directions. And I find that very difficult. I'd rather keep driving, right? And that's how it is. You know, when life's problems come, we'd rather keep driving. We don't want to ask that, especially men, right? But in prayer, I think both men and women are like that. We don't want to ask direction. We believe I can find the way. Basically, we don't inquire of God. But Jesus was not like that. He was always inquiring of God. John chapter 8:28 says, "When you have lifted up the Son of Man on the cross, then you will understand that I am He." This is Jesus saying, "I am the Messiah. I do nothing on my own, but say only what the Father taught me." And we see Jesus constantly going to the Father early morning in prayer, constantly in conversation, constantly inquiring of His Father. And Jesus says, "I can do nothing except what the Father shows me, except what the Father tells me." That's the second thing. Quick practical question, which I'm afraid I won't be able to do full justice to tonight because of time. How can we hear God? How can I inquire of God? So let me quickly try and address it. It's not going to really satisfy us. Perhaps another day, God willing, we look at how do we hear God. Two quick things. Generally, rebellious teenagers have trouble hearing their fathers. That's fact. That's fact. We've got to admit it. You know, we've got to admit we keep going to our dad just for this, our heavenly dad just for this. And so we will have trouble. We've got to give it time. I mean, you can't go tonight and pray, "God, answer me," and I come back tomorrow morning and say, "I prayed, God, and answer me." Yeah? So we need a relationship. We need to learn to talk to our Father first. It does take some time. We've got to be patient. The second thing I would say is, you know, like the teenager who has no relationship, just walks in one day and wants to discuss life's most complex problems, it's going to be difficult. So what we need is a daily relationship. And that's something, at New City, we call that a love discipline. We read through the same chapters of the Bible together. We share, we exchange what God's laid on our hearts. Why do we do that? Because we want to encourage one another. Apart from that daily, meaningful time with God, it's going to be very difficult to really hear God. We will hear. We think it's God, but we will hear what we want to hear. We don't have that relationship. But we'll come back to that another day. Let's get back to the cave of Adullam, and we'll close in the next 10 minutes. When David reached the cave in which he sung, prayed, and wrote his psalm, all his hopes, desires, and ambitions had been crushed, David's life had come to a dead end. That moment, David cries out aloud to God. Towards the end of his life, Jesus too had to enter such a wilderness experience. And quite literally, his life too hit a dead end. All that he could go to at that point in time of his life was the cross. And the night when he was arrested, the day before he was crucified, when he was at this dead end, he goes to this place called the Garden of Gethsemane and he prays. And when we read that earlier verse from Hebrews, which talks about how Jesus' entire life was full of fervent cries to the Father, this is the highlight of that. This is the most desperate of Jesus' cries. I'd like to read that out for us. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them. This prayer, Jesus was away from them, a stone's throw. And when Jesus prayed, even when he was a stone's throw away, the disciples heard it and wrote it down. Jesus was crying out aloud, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Soon after this prayer, Jesus is arrested. And soon after that, that happens. All the disciples deserted him and fled. There are several striking parallels in David's prayer and the life, David's prayer in Psalm 142 and Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane. David was crying out aloud. Jesus was crying out aloud. David was seeking God's wisdom above his own. Jesus was seeking God's wisdom above his own. But there are more similarities. And I'd like to just take us through a few verses in that psalm. "Look and see, there is no one at my right hand," David is crying out. "Look and see, there is no one at my right hand," Jesus is crying out, because all his disciples have deserted him and fled. David was all alone. When he prayed this prayer, the 400 men actually came in later. Jesus was also all alone. Verse 5. David cries, "I cry to you, Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living." Jesus, just as David cried out to God, "You are my refuge," Jesus too cried out to God, "You are my refuge." And God the Father abandons his beloved Son, Jesus. Not only does God the Father abandon and not reply and not answer to Jesus' prayer, but God the Father takes the collective, cumulative anger and wrath of all the sins that you and I have committed, and he pours that wrath, that anger, that fury upon his Son, Jesus Christ, on the cross, so that Christ is fully punished, so that we can be loved, because Christ was punished in our place. And that's what Jesus did for us. And that brings us to the last thing that we want to look at tonight. One thing God does, which we must understand. We saw two things David did, which we can learn from, but one thing God does that we must understand. How did God answer David's prayer? Crying out aloud. How did God answer that prayer? How did God answer Jesus' prayer? I'll share that, draw one principle out of that, and we close in the next three to four minutes. David was perhaps 27 years old when he wrote this psalm. Hugely successful, but driven away, an outcast, has to go into hiding, lived as a fugitive. And that's when David prays. Probably 27 years old when David prayed this prayer, which is given to us since David's time, 3,000 years ago, handed down from generation to generation to us as an instruction on how to pray. this is possibly the best way you can pray, right? How does God answer David's prayer? God answered David's prayer by letting him remain a fugitive for the next 15 years of his life. Chased, pursued, by unjustly pursued by King Saul, living in the wilderness. There are times he had to act like a madman, the things he had to go through. God answered David's prayer by allowing him to spend the prime of his youth in wilderness, preparing him to be king of Israel. God answered Jesus' prayer by sending him to the cross. What's the one thing that God does which we can learn from? God did this with David. God did this with Jesus. And God will do this with each of us. Often, God doesn't take away the suffering, but he gives us the grace to endure it. And through that suffering, he births something new and beautiful in our lives. I want to repeat that again. Often, God doesn't take away the suffering. It is he who brought us to the dead end to get our attention. Often, God doesn't take away the suffering, but he gives us the grace to endure it. And through that very suffering, and suffering is symbolized by the cross, through that very suffering, he births something new and beautiful in our lives. I'm willing to bet that David was a better king because he spent 15 years in exile. I want to close. I want to request Sindhula to come and sing us the last Hindi song just one more time. Maybe we'll just do with Sindhula singing and maybe just Saurabh on the guitar so we won't have any other instruments. I'd like us to just pause for a moment and see if we are in a place where this is where we are, the wilderness. This is where we are. Perhaps we are not there, but this experience is something we'll have to face at some point of time in our lives. And I pray that whether we are in that situation or whether we are heading into that situation, God will prepare us by helping us grow in our relationship with him. We'll sing this last song and then I'll close in prayer.